good world. It's your boy Pete Walsh, aka Hey Yo Yari, Why They Testing Me, aka One Half of the Annoyed Boys, aka I Got No More AKAs, back for the 21st episode of the Respect the Game podcast, the 21 Savage 21. Episode, as Abe called it. I'm here as always with my boy Abe Schwadron. Abe, what's good?
AKA AirPod Abe. Ooh. Yes, that's an iPhone 7 bad joke. Just got done spending the whole day watching the iPhone 7 unveil. Can't wait to lose those AirPods within 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I would think I'm going to head to the to Team Droid, man.
No, you're not.
No, I'm definitely not. But, you know, being that Abe was able to watch the entire Apple presentation today just goes to show you how little there is going on in the basketball world.
It's literally like someone's birthday and then waiting on the Hall of Fame this weekend. And then, like, ooh, somebody, like, tweeted something stupid or said something stupid in an interview at a weird event.
Yeah. And that's...
that's the basketball news cycle. Thank God for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
At least we can, like, get in our feelings about Allen Iverson and Shaq. And
yes.
Yao to a certain extent.
Yes. I mean, going to through, like, old pictures of and highlights of Shaq today... was definitely fire. So follow us at Slam Online on Twitter. We're going to, you know, do some stuff on there for Shaq. Well, today we did Shaq. And, well, if you're listening, yesterday we did Shaq. Today we're doing Allen Iverson. Tomorrow we're going to do Yao. Or actually, wait, I might be getting that screwed up. I think we're going to do Yao today and then Allen Iverson tomorrow, Friday. So, schedule, boys. But, I mean, I guess my only question is, number one, like, everybody gets into the Hall of Fame now, so it's not. I feel like it's not as prestigious as it once was.
Shout out to Mitch Richmond.
Shout out to every college coach who's ever coached a single college game.
Good point.
And I mean, I was curious who votes for the Hall of Fame. Does anybody know?
I honestly don't know.
No, I don't think.
It's got to be media, former players. That's my assumption.
I guess.
You're putting me on the spot. I don't know how to list.
I mean, I really don't think anybody knows who votes for people to get into.
Glad we prepared for this podcast.
Well, speaking of preparation and podcast and this podcast in particular, we got John Wallace coming on, who gave us an hour's worth of his time.
Yeah, man.
Very fire interview.
That was awesome. It actually is really good.
Yeah. So super, super nice guy. Has a load of stories, including, you know,
I felt like he literally could have sat here for 5 hours telling his stories and probably would have been a lot better with the microphones off also.
Yes, facts, but I feel like that's always the case. But he told us great stories about you know, his recruiting trip to Syracuse when he was in high school playing.
And he had a bunch of, you know, dropped here and there, had a bunch of good Allen Iverson stories, which times up pretty nicely.
So he was on the cover of probably our most famous issue ever, the 96 draft class.
Slam 15.
Which Iverson is noticeably missing from. And so he tells us why. He talks to us about the potential for He Got Game 2. He had dinner with Ray Allen pretty recently. He talked to us about Lloyd playing with Lloyd Sweet Pea Daniels. Shout out Ben Osborne. He told us about playing with a rookie Dwayne Wade. Literally a lot of great stories. So, you know, John's been around for a long time. If you've ever been to a Syracuse game, you've likely seen him there. He does a lot of community stuff. So, great guy. And he's here for the Champions Basketball League, which is a league starting next July that's going to feature a lot of old semi-retired NBA players.
A lot of names you'll recognize, though, and that you actually would want to go to a local gym and see them play basketball right now.
Facts. So, you know, being that there's no real news to get into, I guess we'll just dive right into that.
Well, my only thing about just the Hall of Fame, you know, we want to get to John, but so Allen Iverson, I feel like, and even Shaq to a certain extent, if you're an NBA fan of a certain age that we fall into, like if you're between, I don't know, 25 and 37, something like that, pretty much like every single one of those people, their favorite player as a kid was Allen Iverson, Shaq, or maybe Kobe, right? Like if you're going off the board there,
for
or Michael Jordan, I guess.
No, I mean, if you're like in the, like the mid 30 range, yes. But I mean, for us, I've always said this, like Michael Jordan was never my favorite player as a kid. Cause
yeah, I mean, you have the appreciation and, yes, you know, for us growing up, like Mike is Mike.
Yeah.
But your guy, like, I almost have questions for you if your favorite player wasn't AI, Shaq, or Kobe.
Facts.
You got it. Like, you have some explaining to do if like, it's not.
Yeah. Or like Ray Allen or like.
If you want to be cool, yeah, you were like Marbury or Garnett or whatever. But you can't deny that you like AI too.
Yeah. I mean, if you're our age, I'm 29, Abe is 27. Like, we came of age watching AI.
Exactly.
You know, he was. You know, even at Georgetown, like those are some of my earliest basketball.
I mean,
memories.
I'm not gonna sit here and act like I didn't, you know, buy a headband and the arm sleeve and look at myself in the mirror for hours on end, blasting like, you know, whatever Jadakiss, Lil Wayne, dressed as full AI with the door locked.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you know, it will be like a little bit emotional.
Very
if you're
emotional.
A certain pocket.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely going to get emotional while during his speech, for sure. And I mean, Shaq even goes back further than that. I mean, who didn't see Kazam when they were a kid? Like, you know, so I don't know. I mean,
NBA jersey I ever owned, Orlando Magic Shaquille O'Neal jersey. That's
a
fact.
That may have been mine as well. It's either that or Ewing on the Knicks, but it was definitely one of those two. So. Damn, shouts to us for it all coming full circle.
And it all does come full circle because, you know, 96 draft class, and here we have John Wallace about to spread some knowledge.
Word, so enjoy that. We should be back next week.
Oh, we will.
Everything is pending at this point.
Pending, boys.
But we're going to keep rolling these things out. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Champions Basketball League, for giving us alley-oop with John. And enjoy. Peace.
Yeah. You're checking out the Slam Magazine Respect the Game podcast. You heard it first from your boy, Jada.
We're joined now by longtime Slam subscriber since 1997, former Syracuse Orange, former Knick, former Raptor, former Heat. Who am I leaving out?
Pistons,
Suns, John Wallace. John, how are you, man? Thank
What's
you
up,
for
my man?
Chilling.
How you doing? Thank you.
We're good.
Appreciate you having me on the show.
Nah, we've been super excited for this interview all week. You know,
I've been super excited just to turn the mics on. We've already been talking for like 10 minutes since you got here, and I wish we were recording all of it.
True, but John's here today on behalf of Champions League Basketball. He'll be coaching the Gotham Ballers, 2017.
Right.
So, you know, before we get into all the fun stuff, why don't you just tell us a little bit about, you know, the league itself and how you got involved?
Well, I got involved. Carl George, who's the CEO and founder of the company or of the organization, reached out to me almost a year ago. I did my own due diligence on him and the league, and I jumped on board and the opportunity to be involved in such an early phase. And I think it's going to grow to be something really big and huge. It's played at the perfect time, July and August, when there's not much basketball going on, when we all need that fix. You know, it's like when you turn into SportsCenter during July and August, and it's just like, how long do you actually watch it? You don't really watch SportsCenter as much.
You're not a fan of arm wrestling, I take it.
No, arm wrestling, the whatever, you know, obscure sport would be on at that time. And we're going to try to fill that void. The Champions League is going to fill the void of, we're not the NBA. And we're not trying to be the NBA, but we will be the second best basketball you can watch on the planet. And that's why we're doing all our hard work right now. Mark McGuire is involved, and he's been able to reach so many high caliber players who can still really play. And what you got to realize is, the guy who gets cut from the NBA or no longer, like when I left the NBA at 31 years old, I could still really play. If this league was around, I'd have definitely played in this league. I was relegated to playing overseas, and it just, the time, the distance, it just started to wear on me, and it wasn't fun no more for me to play overseas that far away from my family, my kids. Now, if I had something like this, and honestly, the pay is great. You know, you can make a couple hundred thousand just for playing during the summer. The play is great, but you miss that competitiveness. Like, I miss being able to look at a guy and saying, I'm better than you, and then proving it. That's why you compete. That's why you practice. That's why you love sports. You know, you just love to look at someone and say, I'm better than you, and then prove it.
You got a stacked team from the roster that I'm looking at right here. Al Harrington, Kenyon Martin, Sean Marion, all these guys on your team?
Yes, and we're going to be good. And, you know, I'm expecting to win the championship. All the players are expecting to win the championship. I firmly believe that the Gotham Ballers is going to really make a strong impression on this inaugural season for the Champions League.
Eddie Curry, Kareem Rush, Tyshawn Taylor, Jamal Tinsley, Terrence Williams, Josh Childress, Booby Gibson. Those are some of the other names on your roster.
And Eddie Curry looks great.
Yeah?
He's in great shape. He looks really
good. Also, you've already had some practices.
We've had some practices. Okay. We had an exhibition game. Al Harrington looked really good.
Al Harrington was in the NBA like 18 months ago.
Yeah.
Terrence Williams can't even be 30 years old, can he?
Yeah, so some of these guys are still young. You know, it's not just guys who are older and not in the NBA. It's just guys, sometimes things don't work out for in your favor. And you're out the NBA at age 25, 26, and you're still really young. You haven't even reached your prime, you know, and you're still just looking for that void. And hopefully this could be a conduit to them trying to get back in the NBA, if that's something. Because I'm sure some of our games will be scouted. And, you know, you got to always remember, you never know who's watching you. So always play like you're trying to get a job, you know. And I'm looking forward to everything getting started up next summer.
Right.
I thought Booby Gibson retired to do rap. Wasn't that – didn't he stop playing basketball to do hip-hop?
I haven't heard one song.
okay.
I don't know about you. All right,
ask him about that.
I haven't heard any music.
Well, I know
– I'm a music guy.
I mean, knowing you, you're always heavily involved in, you know, charity efforts and community outreach and all that. So there's definitely going to be some sort of, you know, community aspect to this, right? Like, this is strictly like – well, not strictly, but a very family-oriented entertainment, right?
It's definitely going to be much more fan-friendly than the NBA can be. I mean, we're going to give full access to all the players, coaches. I mean, the owners are going to be right in certain venues, and when we do pregame stuff, is going to be the players going to be there interacting with the fans and talking and hanging out. Going to be doing the same thing for the post game. It's going to be a much different atmosphere than you're used to from a pro perspective. You know, what most fans want from with players is access. Just to be able to shake their hand and ask them a question or something. That rarely happens, mm-hmm. right? You know, when's the last time a casual fan was able to ask an NBA player a question? Mm-hmm. In person, and we're gonna give that to the fans, and you know I think that's what's gonna separate us. We're really gonna go heavy on the fan friendly side of things, and put good quality product out on the court, and guys are gonna be in great shape. We're gonna have a good game. It's gonna be fast paced, high scoring games, and as far as the community, we've already been doing events in the community. With you know, teaching young kids in impoverished neighborhoods about eating healthy, being healthy, the importance of getting water in your body. I've done some of the clinics already up there, and it's been a great response. We did one in Harlem, we did one in the Bronx, and we're going to continue to do these year round, and not just myself, but all the players, all the coaches, going to all be involved. It's going to be really, really awesome what we're going to do.
All right, so I want to know. What happens the first time that, you know, Jamal Tinsley or Sean Marion complains to you about their playing time? How are you handling that as a coach?
Well, as a coach, if you don't like your playing time, you should complain. Okay. I mean, I'm not expecting guys if I tell them or if I sit them to accept it. I mean, it doesn't mean it's going to change anything, but you know, you don't have to accept it. You can voice your opinion, because I was one of those players. I like to voice my opinion. I'm not going to be one of those coaches that. You say something to me, I'm going to hold a grudge. I expect you to say something to me.
And plus, you played with a lot of these guys, right?
Sean Marion is one of my best friends. Yeah. I still talk to him all the time. Jamal Tinsley, I talk to all the time. So if those guys think I'm trying, like I'm never going to do anything that's going to be detrimental to the team or winning. So once you understand that, then you understand where I'm coming from.
Are we going to see you suit up at all?
No, no. I'm enjoying the side that I'm on. I can still play.
Yeah.
But I enjoy coaching. I enjoy giving back the wisdom. I'm looking forward to this new chapter in my life of and the Gotham Ballers are going to be, you know, winning and playing a fun style of basketball that's going to keep the fans in the seats.
All right, cool. Yeah, I mean, just to get into your career a little bit, you know, in front of us right now is our cover from 1996, right?
You can't just say the draft class 96 cover without putting emphasis on the greatest draft class ever.
the greatest draft class ever, the class of 1996.
Yeah, I mean, we have tried to redo this cover on more than one occasion with varying results, but never.
It just doesn't ring like that original.
And you know, you're
and if you're listening to this podcast, you know exactly the cover that we're talking about.
So from, and John was a part of it. He was drafted number 18 overall by the Knicks. So yeah, I mean, this photo shoot is obviously amazing and
legendary.
So, you know, you were telling us a little bit about it before the podcast started. So, you know, what are your memories from this day? This was at the rookie transition program, right?
Yeah, it was down in Orlando, and you know, it was inexplicably cold that morning that we were shooting the cover. So that's why we all kind of looked like no one's really smiling. It's kind of chilly out there. And we know it was an early morning, and we knew we had like another 10 hours of the basketball cards and all kind of shoots we had to do out there. And, you know, so no, it wasn't a happy time, to be honest, because it's just like a long, arduous day.
Plus you're a rookie. You're not appreciative yet of anything. Right?
Yeah. And you're not, honestly. And I'm glad you brought that up because being 22-year-old young man at that time, I just wanted to get back to my room and lay down and relax. And everyone else kind of felt the same way. But we powered through it. As you know and everyone else knows, Allen Iverson missed that cover. And
that's what everyone always brings up.
In the basketball cards because he got sent home for being late to the orientation. So we all were late one day. Then they gave us a warning. They said, if you're late again, you're pretty much you're going to get sent home and get fined. And he didn't take heed to it, and he got sent home and fined. And,
did you guys look around, like, where's Allen? Or did you know that he
had I knew it. Okay. I mean, because part of, like, Allen Iverson, Stephon Marbury, and myself, we were, like, we had, like, our own little clique that summer. We hung out really, really hard and had a great time and partied a lot and had a, you know, just kind of came into the NBA together. We were really close. We're very similar and everything we liked and everything we were doing at that time. So it was that was like our clique. We hung out in Atlanta a lot, and we had a great time. And I knew the morning he got sent home because he told me. So
okay.
I knew he was getting sent home.
did he care, or was he just like?
Nah, obviously, Allen, everyone knows Allen's persona.
Yeah, he's going to do what he wants to do.
Yeah.
It didn't bother him in the least bit, and why would it? At that time, I mean, you're 21, you're on top of the world, and
number one pick.
All right, you don't want me to do this pick? I mean, this photo shoot, perfect. Because honestly, a lot of us didn't want to be there. I mean, it was a long day.
I hope you're glad you were there now.
Looking back. Absolutely.
We retroactively thank you for the patience of putting up with it.
My question is, so a lot of times when we do, you know, photo shoots with multiple guys, there's always like one guy who is either like not paying attention or just can't sit still for 1 second, or is always like pinching someone, or who was like the troublemaker or like the guy who couldn't get to stand still during the shot?
We were all trying to get it on the first take because we were ready to get out of there. So there was no messing around. That's why everyone's got a serious face. Like, man, let's get this done. You know what I mean?
So I can go back to sleep.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, I mean, obviously AI going into the hall now this weekend.
Congratulations to AI.
Yes.
The first player from that 96 fame class to go to the Hall of Fame is well-deserved. He changed basketball. He changed,
changed
the whole generation.
I mean,
I remember we were sitting in Atlanta. We were playing at the run and shoot, and we were getting ready to leave. And he was trying to convince Stephon and myself to get braids. He's like, I'm going with the braid look. I'm like, I'm not going with the braid look. He's like, I think I'm going with the braids look. I'm like, well, that's you. I'm not doing it. And he stuck with it. And Stephon obviously couldn't do it. His head's too big. My head's too small. So.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. And I mean, to that, I mean, Kobe, you know, just wrapped up his amazing career. What was your first impression of Kobe?
I ran into Kobe, six years ago, and I actually had to apologize to him because I was kind of one of those guys who was kind of mean to him.
Yeah.
And at the
like
rookie
forever or at
no
this?
No just at the rookie transition because
he's a high schooler.
Everything he was no, but he was talking what he was gonna do, and honestly, everything he said came to fruition. Like he knew he's gonna be the MVP. He knew he's gonna win titles. Multiple titles, and he was talking about being better than Jordan, and you know, to hear a 17-year-old kid say that, you're just like, man, be quiet.
Yeah, you're probably who the fuck is this kid?
Yeah,
like,
don't say another word today. You know what I mean? And I got to give it to him, man. He put in the type of work, and his attention to detail, and his competitiveness is really second to none. I mean, of our generation, he is our Jordan, you know, hands down. Mm-hmm. And you know, not everyone wants to always compare people to Jordan. You don't compare anyone to Jordan. But in our generation, Kobe is our Jordan, so he's Kobe. And now people are going to be compared to Kobe, you know, because he was that great for 20 years. And I know he had some injuries at the end of his career and all that, but for a long, sustained period of time, he was an elite, elite, elite player. Mm-hmm. And it's just a testament to his work ethic and the all the hard work he put in. Like he used to always say, when guys are going out to party or do this or do that, he was going to play basketball. He just played it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to apologize to him because he definitely made everything he said come to fruition. I mean, in a remarkable way.
Did he accept the apology? Or was
of
he
course.
Just...
I mean, you know, and it wasn't like I was like beating him up or anything. Yeah, yeah. Just like I just had to kind of apologize for even being as belligerent as I was to him, for him just speaking what he wanted to do in the future. And I guess he knew better than us.
Wait, it sounds like you guys had an amazing time at this. I mean, outside of like whatever responsibilities you had to the NBA and to whatnot, but like the weekend or however long you were there itself, it sounds like you guys had an awesome time.
It was a great time. Yeah. If you're willing to be receptive to it. Mm. It had some skits. It goes through some – it puts you in some scenarios that you try to help, you know. So if you're ever in that scenario, you know what to do and how to react. And quite honestly, at that time, when you're that young, you're just like, that had never happened to me.
Yeah.
So you don't take – you're not really fully listening. You're not buying into it. Not until later in your career when you like – certain things happen and you're like, oh, I wish I'd have – you know, so
– paid attention.
Yeah, paid more attention. But – I was one of those guys, like I have great retention, so even if I wasn't paying full attention, I remember
it was some corner of your brain, it was still in there.
And that way when those situations arise in my life, I was able to avoid the worst of them.
All right. My last question is just about that cover is, you know, Ray Allen is on that cover too. Technically he still hasn't officially retired. Like, A, do you think he'll come back at some point this season potentially? And B, could you even – like, is it crazy, too, that some guy from this cover could still be legitimately playing in the NBA?
That would be crazy. But I had dinner with Ray about, I don't know, 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago. He looked like he was in great shape. Mm-hmm. We didn't really talk about whether he's going to come back or not. But
I thought you were about to break some news here on the podcast.
No, well, what I will break on the podcast here is, you know, Spike Lee's definitely brewing it to possibly do a He Got Game Part 2.
Breaking news.
You know, hopefully that comes to fruition. That would be awesome. We would all love to shoot it again. that movie was so great and authentic because Spike took real playing clips from us playing over a 2-month span and just broke it down into the movie. It was nothing scripted. It wasn't like, all right, do this move, do that. Like, we were just really playing basketball.
Look at that transition, too, fun. Right into the next thing we wanted to talk about.
He's a pro, man. So, yeah, I mean, what were some of those shoot days like? You know, I guess based on how you guys – was it different than the way you treated the slam photo shoot? Were you guys more open to, you know, being involved in the movie more so than you were a photo shoot?
Oh, man, it was awesome. Spike Lee, that he's the greatest filmmaker. He told us back then, if, you know, give me everything you got on every scene. Really take this serious. And if you do a great job at this, this movie will pay you the rest of your life. Mm. And I'm still getting checks 20 right. years later. So thank you, Spike.
You did say you were good at retaining things. So.
Yeah. But you know what? That movie was just fun, man. We were just hanging out, playing a lot of basketball. That was Rosario Dawson's right. like debut.
Hell yeah.
The other young chick that's like too, a teacher. She was a teacher in the movie, the young Jennifer.
I don't remember.
I don't know, but she's on a new show also. She's been on – she was on the show with Michael J. Fox that he had for a while. She's like secretary on there. But anyways, like it – I mean – Spike gave us this platform, and he said, look, guys, give me everything you got. And
what did you think the first time you actually saw the full movie?
I'm not going to lie, man. I definitely cried a little bit because I was like, I'm on a yeah. big screen. I went to the movie premiere with my girlfriend at the time and my dad, and it was a big deal. You know, I was like, you know, I never had aspirations to be in Hollywood or to be in a movie, but to actually be in a movie and to see yourself on the screen, to have people like kind of applauding for you or mm-hmm. saying you did a good job, it was awesome. And I had my SAG card, so I mean,
I mean, the cast is amazing. I think, were you thinking of Mila Jovovich? I think that was who it was. That was Denzel Washington's
no,
girl in that. No.
She was a teacher in the movie. She had a little brief part in the He Got Game movie. Maybe she's on that new Kevin Can Wait show or something, but she's...
See, this is why we do basketball and not yeah. movie yeah. podcasts.
But, you know, besides yourself, Jim Brown, John Turturro, who was just great in The Night Of on HBO. So.
Love that show.
Yeah. Yeah. Yo, my man.
So good.
So good.
Yo, maybe we should just record a Night Of
what
series.
What a show, man.
Every Monday morning for the last, like, whatever, 8 weeks.
I just can't wait for it to come back on or yeah. what they're going to do next. Yeah. Like, he's out now. So
hey, there was a little basketball element in the first episode of that, too.
True.
Yeah, very true. Basketball movie. Scene there. Yeah. It counts.
So, but yeah, man, I mean, so I guess were you surprised at all at how good of an actor Ray Allen was and how natural it was for him?
No, because he took classes. He took it very serious. Mm-hmm. You know, he was with his acting coach every single day. He took it serious, man. He didn't just show up and say, I'm Ray Allen, I'm going to do all right in this part. No, he took it serious. He was with an acting coach every single day. And, you know, it showed on the screen. You know, yeah. he did a great job. And, you know, because of him doing such a good job and being the lead actor, he carried the movie for us and made it easy for us. So thank you, Ray. Appreciate it.
I'm glad you're here because I've been asking this potentially awkward question to other guests we've had before. But there's obviously that scene with Rick Fox, like, takes Ray Allen's character around the college campus mm-hmm. during his official visit.
Why is that awkward?
Because I'm about to ask you, did you ever have situations like what was that authentic to being a top high school recruit as far as girls
Very
and
authentic.
Parties? Okay.
Very authentic. And good. I mean, that's why they put it in there.
Well, yeah.
That movie is authentic and as real as it comes.
So that happened to you?
Absolutely.
Something like that?
Absolutely.
My man, John Wallace, man.
If it's something that is very consenting, what's wrong with that? Mm. I mean, that happens. That's part of the whole lure of going to that particular school. I mean, trust me, that's not the first time, or will it be the last time that happens at a school? You know, you go on your college visit, you go there to have a good time and to have fun and party a little bit. And as long as you don't get out of control or anything crazy happens or there's no police involved, it's all good.
Was there any school that you went and you're like, whoa, I cannot go here because it's like too crazy?
Nah, because honestly, the school I chose, Syracuse, was two out of my 4 years up there. We were top five party schools in the country.
Hey,
I mean,
there you go.
But what else you gonna do in college? You party,
especially in Syracuse.
And then
facts,
too like cold. Every adult that went to college would tell you that's the greatest 4 years of your life. Now you leave college and you change. Like you gotta, all right, now it's a real world. You gotta adjust. But while you're in college, you gotta live it up because I mean it's like the peak and it's like all downhill after that in terms of like your partying and your responsibilities. Yeah. Like just, I mean, I give my career savings and everything right now to go back to college. I mean. We all would.
Are you sure about that?
Absolutely. Right,
yours is a lot more than ours, but I would too.
I would give the couple $100 I have in my name to go back to college.
And those 4 years are priceless, man.
Hey, but a lot of guys barely have even 1 year now. Like, if you know you're a one-and-done guy, you're maybe at college for like 6-7 months.
Yeah, and you know, I'm a proponent of, you know, you go and get paid when you can, mm-hmm. obviously. But I wouldn't trade my 4 years at Syracuse to go any earlier in the draft to get a higher draft position. I wouldn't change anything because everything worked out great for me. Being in New York and being part of the Knick community and the Knick family has been awesome and is still, you know, paying me right now. I work for the Knicks and doing some fan development PR stuff. So I have nothing but, you know, good things about my four-year experience. Other guys, you know, they need a year. Some guys wish they had another year because that year didn't work out for them, that one and done. Like, one and done's not for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, for every guy that's one and done and for every Carmelo and Kevin Durant, there's a bunch of guys who, you know, did the one and done and didn't make it.
Right.
And now what are they doing?
Yeah.
You know, so I think the change needs to happen and starting in high school when these kids are identified as being, like, special, definite, can't miss college prospect, mm-hmm. they should have to take money management, business management classes. So now when you come into all this money, you're able to handle it. You're able to, you know, have a business acumen mm-hmm. because honestly, no matter who you are, 22, 21, it's hard to handle that change of lifestyle.
The hardest part is what you said before about when you went to rookie transition and you're not really paying attention because you don't think it applies to you. So
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I always felt that your senior year of college or whatever your last semester is in college, you should be taking classes on like how to do your taxes and all this.
Absolutely. Because
the first year I had to do taxes, I had no idea what I was, I still have no idea what
taxes,
I'm doing.
Taxes, man, it should be like how, there was that whole story when Kwame Brown got drafted to the Wizards where like he didn't even know how to take his dry cleaning out. Or like
he had to buy a new suit like every week.
He didn't know how to feed himself.
Well, see, what I try to, and I mentor some of the Syracuse guys that are in the NBA now. And Chris McCullough and those guys, and Malachi Richardson. And I talked to them about, you know, just taking care of your money. And me personally, I don't understand paying someone to pay your bills for you. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, say that to yourself five times. You're paying someone to pay your bills for you with your money.
Paying double, man.
Yeah.
You know, so what I used to do is take, and this Charles Oakley put me onto this.
Yeah.
I take 20 minutes or so, half hour a month, and I pay all my own bills. Mm. That way I could see the, because what happens, like you don't realize how much your bills may cost. You're like, wait, hold on. Why did so much money go out of my account at one time?
Yeah.
And when you start doing your own bills, you realize how much is supposed to go out. Mm-hmm. And the amount that's supposed to go out and the amount that does go out should be the same.
Yeah. You're like, why am I paying for Netflix when I could just use someone else's password?
Yeah. Yeah, that's me because I'm definitely frugal. So I would do something like that.
Yeah, you mentioned Charles Oakley. Pretty much every single player that I've talked to who has been a teammate of Charles Oakley just raves about him. What made him such, you know, a great teammate and great guy and great team player?
Well, we're still really good friends to this day. He's just a great guy in terms of the business advice he gave me early in my rookie career, telling me, you know, don't invest my money until my fifth or sixth year. Let my money accumulate. make sure I do my own due diligence, make sure I handle my own money. I mean, every money management guy thought I was crazy because I snatched all my money from them and I put them in CDs
right.
at like 8-9% back then. And it was like it did very well for me. But that was all my Oakley influence because we'd have those long flights all the time and I'd sit around and pick his brain. Herb Williams, another one, very smart guy. I'd always pick his brains about business stuff. And John Starks, he's doing well in business. And I'd always pick those guys' brains 99% of the time about business and life, not about basketball.
Right.
You know, that was the easy part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, you probably didn't think that you needed their advice for basketball stuff anyway.
Well, in my egotistical, confident way, I just, you know, I was a student of the game, and I studied my playbook, and I knew, besides Herb, who helped everyone, well, that's why my nickname for Herb was Confucius, because he's like the smartest guy ever, man. But Oakley really helped me all away from the court, from a business standpoint. And now I'm trying to pass on this knowledge to the guys that I mentor and pass on to the guys in the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
The Carl George, who's the CEO of the company or of the league, he's got a tech background. So if any of the guys are in the Champions League are thinking about getting into tech world, you might want to pick his brain and talk to him.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about getting into the oil and gas world, you can talk to me. I've done that for multiple years, and I sit on the board of a oil and gas company called Petro River right now. So, it just, if you don't inform them, they don't know to ask you.
Right.
So I'm trying to inform all the guys, especially in the Champions League, about everything that they should be doing in terms of setting up so you can always live comfortable.
Yeah, and I mean, just to go back to, you know, Syracuse a little bit, I still see you at games whenever they're playing at the
Cuse.
And you were at the Final Four this year. No?
I'm at every Final Four, man. It's the Cuse, baby.
But, you know, between like Cuse, North Carolina, Duke, Michigan State, you know, these places are such institutions. So, you know, can you just talk about like the community, and you know, you're still, if it you were close, you're probably still close to Derek Coleman, but like
all those guys,
yeah, all you guys,
we're
are
a
just,
family.
It's like a brotherhood.
And only the Coach K players can say the same thing, because we had the same the continuity at the, same coach, same everything, but there's no brotherhood and familyhood like Syracuse, man. It really isn't. And I'm going up there this Friday to speak at his charity cancer event with Coach Boeheim called the Griffin's Guardians, and I'll be the keynote speaker up there. And that's what Syracuse is, man. And I'll tell you something, and I wasn't aware of this, so Coach brought it up last year. Syracuse and Syracuse University, we raised more money from charities than all those schools you just talked about.
Mm.
Combined.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys love to give back. I mean, Mello donated all
that
money back to the school, and
we love to get. It's an awesome thing up there, man. Like it's awesome, and I think like all my Syracuse guys who've helped me in business, and you know, with my glass company down here in New York, you know, they've been.
Are you hiring?
No. Yeah. We're always looking to hire, but it's just like the Syracuse family is just, it runs deep. It's real. It's genuine. Every time I go back to the dome, it's like the first day I walked on campus. Seriously, it's like that much love all the time.
Yeah.
And I just don't, like, obviously I'm biased, but I just don't think there's another school in the country that the fans give that much love continuously and is genuine. Like, you've never heard a player get booed at Syracuse in the dome ever. Even when we deserve to, it just doesn't happen because it just they just love you so much. It's real, and it's a special place.
All right, so I think we should jump into some more detailed NBA career talk here.
Hell yeah.
Well, just because you already kind of told it to me before we turned the mics on and stuff, but we right in the room here we have a big giant blow up poster of Dwayne Wade, one of his old Slam covers. So you got to retell us that story. I mean, you were with the Heat during his rookie year.
Yeah,
so what was your first impression of him?
Well, my first impression was he's just like incredibly, insanely athletic, mm-hmm. and he's only like 6'2". And
hold on, because people forget that now, because he's, you know, in the sort of tail end of his career and he's with the new. But like 2003, Dwayne Wade, straight out of college, was crazy athletic.
2006, like Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I always, and no one, you know, would side with me on this, but I always felt like he was better than LeBron. Prime for prime, peak for peak. Dwayne Wade from 2005 to like 2010 was just insane. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the guy dunks the ball like he's 6'11",
yeah.
and he's 6'2". He's literally 6'2". He's the most humble guy you're ever going to meet in your life. And I was telling you earlier that our very first NBA practice, I mean, he literally jumped over Brian Grant, dunked the ball, and Pat Riley was like, I guess that ends practice, and that was practice. I mean, and myself, Samaki Walker, and Lamar Odom, we went back to our rooms, and we were, like, talking about how this kid is special, and he's like, incredible. And then we had a preseason game that year in Puerto Rico. We played against Allen Iverson. I gave Stephon and Allen Iverson a call, and I said, man, this kid, Dwayne Wade, is really, really good. Mm-hmm. You're going to have your hands full. And I never forget Allen telling me, you know, wait till I put this NBA defense on him. And then after the game, he's like, you know, yo, Dub, you were right. That kid is nice. Like, he just it's like he doesn't have the greatest handles, but you can't steal the ball from him.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So strong, yeah, man. Crazy.
But he doesn't look like he can bench, but he's really strong.
Yeah.
Really,
you're right about the handles, though. He kind of almost dribbles, like, so far away from his body, and you're like, I could grab that.
And the minute you go for it, he crosses and he makes you look stupid. And then he gets in the lane, he just dunks on big guys for fun.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to watch him develop, and Eric Spoelstra should get a lot of credit because he worked the hell out of him down there. Like, I tell guys all the time, when you play for the Van Gundys, the Rileys, now the Spoelstras, and all the everyone that coached under those coaches, Tom Thibodeau, you're going to have a certain level of pedigree and a certain level of toughness, and you're going to work so hard in practice that the word potential is never going to be a sentence in your vocabulary, because you're going to definitely maximize your potential. You're never going to say, well, that kid didn't play up to his potential. It's never going to happen. It's never going to happen for those coaches. And players that have played for them, they have their best seasons for those guys, because they ask so much of you every single day. You know, so Dwayne Wade, I knew he was going to be special from day one. And with that kind of coaching and his own, you know, work ethic, and working with Tim Grover and those guys during this, you know, he's exceeded anything I'm sure he thought he can do coming out of Marquette at 6'2".
Yeah. What do you think about him going back to Chicago?
I'm happy for him. Yeah. You know, it's good to go home. I mean, I don't know about anyone else, but when I playing for the Knicks, I loved every second of it. I loved, you know, I'm from New York. Not that I'm from New York City, but being from New York State and being like the hometown kid, I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And you know, and Dwayne, you know, I guess he called Miami's bluff. And Pat Riley later, you know, he acknowledges that he might have made the wrong move. But, you know, and Pat Riley, his hubris, thought that no matter what, Dwayne was coming back. And Dwayne was like, well, you know, I've already taken a couple pay cuts. I can't continuously keep taking pay cuts. And it's time for me to get paid. And Chicago gave him the money that's well deserved. I mean,
he's
worth every penny of that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I mean, we got to bring up the other. I mean, so we were doing some research, obviously, just, you know, thinking about things we want to ask you today. And the one thing that Pete stumbled upon that was just incredible is the 97-98 Raptors roster, right?
Yeah, I mean.
We were just young, man.
Yeah, well,
that's
a crazy
roster.
Your best statistical season, and you played all 82 games. But during that season, at one point or another, you had Chauncey Billups, D. Brown, Marcus Camby, Doug Christie, Lloyd Sweepy Daniels, Popeye Jones, a rookie Tracy McGrady, Roy Rogers, Damon Stoudemire, Gary Trent, and Walt the Wizard Williams, amongst others. Like,
yeah.
How the hell did that happen?
And we lost, like, We lost like 27 games that year or something by like 5 points or less or something. Like, we just had a lot of tough losses.
Yeah, because that like team you didn't said, win very many games, right?
And no, no, we won 17 games. Yeesh. We were 17-65. And like you said, I played all 82 games, mm-hmm. Which was a personal goal of mine and like something I kind of, you know, talk about with like a badge of honor, because when you're the worst league team in the NBA, it's easy to sit out games, and guys are sitting out games for hangnails and all kind of.
Oh, I thought you were going to say hangovers.
No.
Nowadays guys don't want to play 82 anymore, just, man.
I don't get it.
No, me either.
Like it was like during my era, 82, man, you know, like you were a man, like you played through the Knicks and the pain. Like I had a broke toe during that season. I didn't miss one game, you know, but it's not viewed upon in the same light as it was back then. Like, you know, if you sat out a game when I played, it's like you had to have like something majorly wrong with you.
Yeah.
A, because you wanted to play so bad. Mm. Like, you just couldn't fathom missing a game. And B, you just didn't want to let your teammates down and your coaches. Like, it's just a certain sense of pride. And then somewhere along the line, some guy just started sitting out towards the end of the season or getting rest. I just never heard of that.
One of my favorite stats is a 40-year-old John Stockton played all 82 games last year of his career. And that's
John Stockton.
Yeah.
and for a guy who looks like he should be doing your taxes, when he screens you, it's not anything – no one ever talks about, like, he's the greatest screener in the world. You just never hear that conversation, right? It's like never – like, there's a 4 million talk shows. You never heard that as a topic of discussion, the greatest screener. But he is arguably – he is undeniably the greatest screener.
Really?
And it's because he would stick his nose on the biggest guy, and he'd give you a little bit of room, just enough for you to run right into him like a brick wall. Mm-hmm. And he'd stand, he'd hold firm, and he'd get Karl Malone a layup like 8 or 9 times a game.
Yeah.
And he's just a tough guy, man. Just a tough, unassuming Hall of Famer and one of the greatest point guards in NBA history.
Yeah. I mean, just to talk a little bit more about the 82 games, I think that's just one of the most fascinating things to me, is like how guys just don't do that anymore. But I give James Harden a lot of credit, you know, for as much crap as he takes for his defense or not being a leader or whatever. He played all 82 games last year, and that team probably wouldn't have made the playoffs.
No,
like,
you're right.
Definitely would not have made the playoffs had he not.
But if Harden played for, you know, a Thibodeau, one of the Van Gundys, he'd become a better defender overnight, or he just wouldn't play that much.
Right.
They try to, like, obviously they've had guys who weren't great defenders on their teams, right? But they try to put you in a position to help whatever deficiency you might have. Or make sure certain guys are ready to help out on your side or whatever. So it's not that James Harden can't play defense. He's just got to be brought to his attention more so, and he's got to make a conscious effort. Because there's times when you see that he definitely digs in and he plays D, and then there's other times where it's just not a thought in his mind. So with those coaches, you have more times where you have to dig in because they're constantly on you about it. So. But obviously James Harden's one of the best players in the NBA.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. I mean, before we move on, I just want to ask if you have any good Lloyd Sweet Pete Daniels stories, or any at all, if you remember playing with him that year.
Well, I definitely remember playing with Lloyd. I remember going to see Lloyd play when I was a young kid, and he's the best player I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
For real?
For real. This is a guy who was on drugs. But he used to come down and shoot left-handed and right-handed threes and call it out for you and bank it if you wanted him to. He'd bank threes and make them at a very high clip. And he played point guard. And that one year, Andrew Jackson, he averaged like 31 points, 13 assists, 11 rebounds, something like that. He was so ahead of the game. And, you know, Larry Johnson told me one of the best stories about Lloyd Daniels when he went down to visit at UNLV. And it was the UNLV team that would eventually win the national championship.
Right.
And it was Larry, they were playing pickup, and it was Lloyd and like 4 guys off the bench against Larry, Stacey Augman.
Starters, basically.
All the starters.
Yeah.
And they beat them every game. And this is Larry telling me that, like, but that's how good Loey was. He made everyone so good around him. He was so good. Obviously, it sucks that he went down that path of drugs and all that, but that just shows you how remarkable he is. He got shot, stabbed, drug addict, and he still made it to the NBA. I mean, just like.
If anyone else gets one of those things happening,
it derails you forever. I mean, but he was still able to overcome all that and make it to the NBA. It's just, I mean, his basketball mind and just hanging out with him during those times was a treat because, you know, you definitely become a better player. And your basketball IQ increases just by conversing with Loey Daniels.
Yeah, one of the most remarkable stories in NBA history.
If you haven't seen that documentary and you're listening, to get on that, see that.
Oh, they did a documentary on him?
Yeah.
I read the book, so. Yeah. And I know him, so I don't. Yeah, but I've never seen it. They did a documentary?
The guy who did the book helped out a lot with the documentary, I believe, and was in it. And
it was, didn't Ron Nocliero help write it?
Yeah, he helped out.
Oh, Ron. Yeah. Ron's my guy.
Yeah, I think he...
from Cardoza.
Yeah. So, but, they just came out with the documentary last year.
But it wasn't a 30 for 30, right?
No, it was. It was like, it got picked up at Tribeca? No.
See, now we don't know what we're talking about.
I don't want to...
Because we're talking film again. We're talking film. Every time we got to steer clear of the film.
I don't want to misspeak
Unless it's He Got Game.
We went to the premiere last year and... the film is excellent. It's showing at a couple of smaller film festivals.
Yeah,
still
definitely not wide release. So. Yeah.
No, it hasn't been released. But
it's not for public consumption.
No, we know one of the producers, so maybe we might be able to get you a link. Okay, hopefully.
That's awesome because that's a story that needs to be told.
Yeah,
and more importantly, that's a story that the kids need to watch. Just like the Lenny Cook story, you know, minus the drug use, Loey, man, he was crazy.
He still pops up in New York every now and then. He coaches a few
high school
kids.
His son is
pretty
good.
Really?
I've seen him over the years. His son's a pretty good player, and he's playing out of Jersey. So, and Loey's living in Jersey, so he's doing all right.
Cool. Yep. Very cool. What you got, Abe?
No, I mean, I was just going to keep rolling down that Raptor. Dude, this Raptors roster from 98 is insane. Yeah. Like, rookie T-Mac? What was he like?
So good, but just not confident yet.
Okay. And, he took a little bit to sort of come into his own.
Yeah, he was lacking a little confidence, but the skills were there. He was definitely, very skillful. And then the next year, he kind of took that leap when Vince joined the team, and they pushed each other, and it was very special to see those two guys from a athleticism standpoint. I don't think there was two guys on any team in NBA history to have that much athleticism. It was
crazy.
A treat every day
crazy.
In practice. I mean, Tracy jumped higher, Vince jumped further, and it was just amazing in practice.
So what was that like for you to try to – I mean, I assume you're probably guarding one
or both of them.
Well,
I was definitely guarding
them.
Yeah. Well, I'm old school. So I came from the you don't dunk on me no matter what law. when I felt like they were going to try to take flight, I would just knock them down or bump them, and then on the other end, they were just both too light to guard me, but I'm not sitting here saying I could guard both of them because they were both really, really quick and very, very athletic. So, but trust me, at the end of practice, they knew I was there and I knew they were there. So, and I saw you wanted to accomplish in practice, never letting yourself get dominated.
Right.
Yesterday we had DeLon Wright, who plays for the Raptors now. He came by and said what's up, and he was saying just how much he and all the rest of the guys in Toronto love living
That's
in
DeRon
Toronto.
Wright's brother?
Yeah, his little brother.
Yeah.
He was just saying that those guys really, I mean, like being in Toronto is just a great place to live. So I was wondering, where did that kind of rank on your – I mean, you played in a lot of
different
cities.
Toronto's number two, man.
New York's
always going to be number one. And
okay.
And Toronto's number two because it's like a clean New York City. It's really, really nice, very – especially from a social standpoint, it's awesome.
Yeah. Social. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Social. So it's like
– the air quotes.
And then – go ahead.
It was a great time, man. It was a great city. I loved Miami also. But Miami can, like – you can get sucked into a
– get lost
in the abyss, so to speak, and then before you know it, you're just like you know, what am I doing out here?
Yeah.
You know, but I love New York. I love Toronto.
Yeah, you lucked out, man. You played in three of the best
NBAs. I was in Phoenix, too. Yeah. So it's like, yeah. I got really lucky, man. I have no complaints. And then when I played overseas, I was in Athens, Greece, which was awesome. And I was in Italy, Udine, and I was in Milan every other weekend. So
look at this guy.
Yeah,
man.
I had a great time, a great run, and I really enjoyed myself.
No
yeah.
mention of Detroit in there.
That was the worst.
Glaring.
Oh, God.
As far as the social scene there, it's got to be the last.
That was the one place I just never left my place really too much, man. It was
That was rough.
It was a long winters, man. Toronto's long, too, but at least the people are nice.
Detroit's, like, morbid. It's just,
At least they got a fun team now, at least.
Yeah. For sure.
Like a bunch of young guys there, but yeah.
And they're going to win. Van Gundy's there. I'm telling you, man, he's definitely making a difference.
True.
That's what he does. And, you know, just like I knew he was going to ship Josh Smith out of there as soon as he got there because I knew he's just not his kind of player.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that was going to happen immediately.
Yeah.
Like immediately I knew it. So
they kind of took off once that happened too. Yeah. So
then after, you know, you went from being on the worst team in the league back to New York, and then I think you guys went to the conference finals, right, against the Pacers?
And we lost to the Pacers. Yeah. Reggie Miller hit. I mean, Latrell Sprewell played as good a defense as you can play on him. And the guy drained two back-to-back threes from, like, you know, 27 feet or something. Mm-hmm. It was just remarkable.
Yeah.
And, you know, that ended our run. And it sucked because, you know, we really felt we were the better team, and just that Reggie just was more clutch in that series, and that's hard to say being a New York guy, you know, because you just really want to punch Reggie Miller in his face sometimes. you can't do it during the game.
Yeah. For New York basketball, that was an amazing stretch. And, I mean, you know, you mentioned playing for Jeff earlier, but, you know, you still keep in touch with Jeff at all?
Yeah, I talk to Jeff. I talk to Jeff periodically. We reach out to each other. I see him all the time at the Garden when I'm working games. And he's doing some games. Yeah. So, and it's always been, you know, love between us. We're from the same – he's from Rochester.
Oh, okay.
His first coaching job's up in Rochester, New York, at McQuaid High School.
Right.
My very first college letter I ever received was from Coach Van Gundy.
Get out of here.
He was a coach at Rutgers, and I was at the Big Man Point Guard Camp, and I was in ninth grade, and he sent me my very first letter. I pinned it up on the wall, and I remember I read that thing every day before I went to go and work out, man. I was like, I'm going to college.
The Oneonta Big Man Point Guard.
Yep.
Does that still exist?
No.
No way that exists.
No. No, absolutely not.
Sounds like you just made it up on the fly. Had I not known Oneonta was a real place, I would have had to go check out that, fact check that. Yeah, man, I mean, that's about all. But you got anything else, Abe?
Nah, we've been all over the map. Unless there's anything you feel like you need to tell us at this point.
I mean, Champions Basketball League,
honestly, we're going to be doing some exhibition games for the Champions League. Mm-hmm. And by the time we roll out the red carpet next year, next summer, come July, you're going to have the second best players that you can possibly have on the planet, you know, second to the NBA. You know, we'll beat the D League, we'll beat, you know, the European, like we're gonna have like a really, really, really high caliber of players. It's not just gonna be older NBA players, it's just gonna be guys who used to play in the NBA and are looking for that level of competition to further their career, and by career I mean we're paying you enough that you can sustain. You know, it's not like, you know, it's a couple hundred thousand, and if you win, you know, the championship and if you win your division and you win the tournament, which is going to be NCAA style type tournament in Vegas in September, with all teams involved in a tournament, that's another 100 on top. So you could conceivably walk away with $350,000 or so.
Nice.
Last I checked, that's a great summer.
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, yeah. Who doesn't want to do that for a summer?
So how do we? How much? I mean, do we now have like the courtside seat hookup?
Absolutely.
Or after this?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely. And you know, honestly, tickets are going to be $25.
Wow.
It's going to be very, very affordable. You know, you can bring your whole family out to a game, $100, $125, and your whole family's there, and you're, you know, great seats, and you're enjoying really, really good basketball.
Where are these games going to be played?
St. John's.
Cool.
And possibly at Baruch, and maybe Pace. You know, those are the three colleges we're kind of throwing around. But mm-hmm. I think most of the games are going to be at St. John's, I think.
I mean, it's easy access.
Exactly. Yes. Nothing better than, you know, having a stadium in the city.
I could tell you're a Queens kid. You got the Mets hat on.
Yeah, I live in Astoria.
Yeah, I know. You ain't got to tell me. I know it.
John, thank you so much. Congratulations.
Thanks, man. I appreciate
on all your
it.
Success,
thank
man.
You. Thank you.
The door is always open here if you just, you know, find yourself in the neighborhood.
Let me just say one last thing, man. Slam, and this is not like some shameless plug. I've been reading Slam magazine for a very long time. You guys actually have real great articles. I love the diaries. I love the little slam of the month. I love the in your face. You know, I love the little captions at the bottom that, you
noise.
Know.
Noise. That's noise. My that's our favorite
yeah, so,
part, too.
I mean, I'm a big-time subscriber. I've been subscribing since 1997, so you guys get my check every year. So thank you so much, man. I really
thank you.
Appreciate
this
it.
Is a true story because we tried to give him new issues, and he was like, nah, I already have all these
yeah,
guys.
I do. I definitely do. I got to stack them in my – now my younger son's going through all of them,
awesome.
So it's awesome,
cool.
man.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, John, thank you so much, man. Appreciate
thanks,
you.
Appreciate
thanks.
Appreciate
all right. Oh, and shout out Otis Hill, too.
Oh, Hill?